Next up, we're going to hear from Farah Ahmed from the Kansas Department of Health and Environment.
Hi, everyone. My name is Farah Ahmed. I'm with the Kansas Department of Health and Environment. I just wanted to talk a little bit today about an investigation we did of tetrachloroethylene and trichloroethylene exposure in Wichita, Kansas. So tetrachloroethylene, also known as PCE, is commonly found in dry cleaning facilities. Trichloroethylene is a, or TCE, is a breakdown product of PCE. Short-term exposure to air with high levels of PCE can cause dizziness, headaches, may even cause unconsciousness or death. Long-term exposure to low levels can cause changes in mood, memory, and vision. The literature suggests that exposure to PCE in humans may cause an increased risk of bladder cancer, multiple myeloma, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, breast cancer, and lung cancer. Studies have also shown that exposure during first trimester of pregnancy may increase the risk of miscarriages, whereas levels high exposure throughout the pregnancy might increase the risk of preterm birth. Short-term exposure to TCE can cause dizziness, headaches, and sleepiness, whereas exposure to large amounts can cause damage to nerves of the face, changes in heartbeat, liver and kidney damage, as well as coma or even cause death. The literature shows that exposure to TCE in humans can cause or may cause cancers of kidney and liver, as well as malignant lymphoma, and that women exposed to very high levels during their entire pregnancy may experience an increased risk for small for gestational age babies. So back in 2009, the Kansas Department of Health and Environment was conducting a site investigation at a former aircraft instrument manufacturing plant. So that's seen here south of the plume. And the investigators were actually looking for elevated levels of chromium, but ended up finding high levels of PCE and TCE in the groundwater. So a full site investigation in 2013 identified two dry cleaners, so seen at the north end of the plume here, as being the cause of the plume. And the investigation found that this plume actually impacted a very large residential area that relied heavily on private well water. So one of the dry cleaning facilities was actually established in 1962 and the other one in 1968. So it's possible that the contamination at the facilities began very early on, as early as 1962, although of course it would take several years for that contamination to get into the groundwater. So the impacted area included 198 residential addresses, and PCE levels were found above 500 micrograms per liter. So that's a concentration over 110 times greater than EPA's MCL of 5 micrograms per liter. The investigation also found TCE contamination at levels up to 19 micrograms per liter, so that's also exceeding the MCL for TCE, which is also 5 micrograms per liter. So the area of concern was expanded out to include a buffer area of one block. So then we ended up with a total area of concern of 600 addresses. So on April 10th, 2014, KDHE held a public meeting to discuss the investigation for the groundwater contamination and talk about the city and state efforts to get everyone hooked up to city water. So during that meeting, I talked about, you know, what the potential health effects are for PCE and TCE exposure, and there was obviously a lot of community concern about what their potential health effects would be, and there was a lot of a number of requests that KDHE do a disease cluster investigation. So our non-infectious disease cluster investigation guidelines are adapted from the CDC CSDE 2013 guidelines. So we started off by gathering information on the potential contaminants of concern, what the potential routes of exposure were, and what the potential health effects were. So those are the ones that are listed here. We started off by creating a database of the 600 addresses in the area of interest and we created a list of the current title owners. So then we go to the Kansas Cancer Registry and search for both the addresses and the names of the title owners. We calculated age-adjusted incidence rates for cancers of interest and calculated the standardized incidence ratio for a few specific cancers. So that's to determine if the observed number of cancers are higher or lower than expected. So for that, we use the incidence rates from the Surveillance, Epidemiology, and End Results, so the SEER program. That's available online, and that's really useful because it's useful for when you have a small number of cases, but also so that you can look to see if there's an excess in younger residents. For the birth outcome analysis, we again started off by gathering information on possible routes of exposure and potential health effects. So we focused here on birth defects and stillbirths. So we used that same database of 600 addresses, and we searched the birth defects information system. For us, that is a passive surveillance system that is largely based on birth certificates and reports from physicians. So we searched for matches between our addresses that we're interested in and mom's residential addresses. So we focused in on the number and type of birth defects and the number of stillbirths and calculated the prevalence of birth defects in the area of interest compared to the U.S. So looking in the cancer registry, when we were looking based on the addresses, we found 58 cases for all of our target cancers. And then when we looked based on the title owner names, we found 27 cases. So based on just numbers of cases, we focused our age-adjusted incidence rate calculations on female breast, lung and bronchus, and all target cancers combined. So between 2002 and 2011, our area of interest, the age-adjusted incidence rate for female breast cancer was statistically significantly lower than the county that it was in, the region that it's in, as well as the state. Did that go? Yeah. And similarly, the age-adjusted incidence rate for lung and bronchus cancer was also lower than our three comparison areas, as well as the age-adjusted incidence rate for all of the target cancers that we were looking at. For all of the cancers that we looked at, the observed number of cases was actually lower than what was expected. And all of the SIRs, because the 95% confidence interval doesn't contain one, the low number of observed cases is not likely to have occurred by chance. So for the birth outcomes, for the time period we're looking at, there were 35,803 records in our birth defects information system. So based on matching of mom's residential address, we found 13 moms that had listed those addresses. So of those 13 address matches, there were 12 infants born with different birth defects, but those were 12 different birth defects and one stillborn infant. And none of the birth defects that we found were associated in the literature with PCE or TCE exposure. There were 898 births to women listing any of those 600 addresses in the area of interest. So that gives us approximately 1.4% of births in the area of interest being affected. And so the overall prevalence of birth defects in the U.S. is approximately 3%. There are a number of limitations that should be kept in mind. We didn't have information on how long a person lived at any of the addresses. So obviously for things like cancer, there's typically a long period of time between when someone is exposed to a cancer-causing agent and when cancer actually develops. We were looking at current title owners, so that doesn't mean that they necessarily lived there. They could have owned a house there and rented it out. We didn't have any information on other risk factors that might be associated with our outcomes. And for the birth defects investigation, we're looking at mom's residential address as self-reported on the birth certificate, right? So that might not have been where she lived, and it might not have been where she lived during those first few weeks of pregnancy when the fetus would have been actually most susceptible. So in light of those gaps and in light of the weight of the scientific evidence, we did feel that further study is warranted. We are currently partnering with the University of Kansas Medical School in Wichita and Boston University to design a second phase of the study. So for this, we're going to look at anyone who lived in the area of interest, so not just those title owners, between 1965 and 2014. So that is also a longer study period than original. There's going to be a comparison population of unexposed people. We're going to have a survey instrument, so a questionnaire that's been validated and used in Cape Cod to assess like how long a person lived there, what their actual water usage was. We'll ask about health outcomes that are not just registry data, so you know, neurological disease, learning disability, reproductive issues, vision issues, that kind of stuff. We're going to do a better job with the exposure assessment using groundwater monitoring data as well as computer modeling to do a better job of that. And we'll have cause of death information from the Kansas Death Registration System and the National Death Index.